Oklahoma, number five team in the country, unbeaten. I think Lincoln's done a tremendous job there. That's one of the premier jobs in the country, but I think it's also a really difficult job. And he got it. He's following a legend there in Bob Stoops, and I got a lot of respect for how he's handled that. If you look at their football team, they've got a complete football team. They're playing well in all three phases right now. I think he's done a great job of putting together a staff. So a lot of respect for what he's done there. Obviously, his record speaks for itself.
West Virginia, so we're looking forward to playing these guys, coaching staff that, you know, we're all pretty familiar with. Known Neil Brown for a long time, kind of ran in the same circles offensively for a long time. Have a ton of respect for him.
This is the Signal Caller Podcast.
From the X's to the O's to the Jimmies and the Joes.
Your inside look at West Virginia Mountaineer football, the Big 12 Conference, and the college game at large.
Now, coming to you from high atop the majestic mountains of almost heaven,
here's your host,
Jed Drenning.
Welcome to it, folks. Episode 15 of the Signal Caller Podcast. The Oklahoma Sooners edition. We'll, of course, be taking a look ahead to West Virginia's trip to the Palace on the Prairie this Saturday to face Lincoln Riley Sooners, their historically explosive offense, their new-look defense. What a difference first-year defensive coordinator Alex Grinch has made in Norman, but we'll get to that. First, let's quickly revisit West Virginia's loss to Matt Campbell's Iowa State Cyclones in Morgantown last Saturday. Despite the loss of starting quarterback Austin Kendall early in the game, West Virginia fought and clawed in all three phases and managed to keep things close for three-plus quarters. It was a 21-14 game into the fourth quarter, but ultimately, the mistakes piled up and proved too much to overcome. Here's Coach Brown walking us through the good and the bad in all three phases of the game.
I thought special teams-wise, we were average. We weren't poor, but we weren't good enough to win the game. Our kickoff return unit, we lost a lot of one-on-one battles. I thought there were some opportunities there to maybe make some game-changing plays, and we did not do that. I thought the kickoff out of bounds was really hurt us. You know, we get the pick six, and we go up seven, and then we give them really good field position by kicking the ball out of bounds there. I thought that was a key play. Some of the positives, I think now going back, this is the fifth week in a row we have not allowed a punt return yard. I thought we had really good effort in our coverage units. I thought we did a nice job getting down there on our kickoff and our punt team. And then a little thing that you all probably don't notice, but our extra point protection is much, much improved. Our field goal protection has made strides.
You heard Coach Brown there talking about the lost opportunities on kickoff returns by virtue of losing the one-on-one battles. Look, you figured against Iowa State, which had the lowest touchback percentage in the Big 12, you'd have some opportunities to return some kicks. And of course, West Virginia did. They had five kickoff returns and came close to making something happen on a couple of them. But as it turned out, the longest return was 27 yards. This is a phase of the game. We've talked about this before. When it comes to hidden yardage, a lot of things impact starting field position. Among those things is your kickoff return and your kickoff coverage units, your punt coverage units, your punt return units. These are opportunities to tilt the field. And when West Virginia has been at its best this year, in large part, it's been when the Mountaineers are beneficiaries of an advantage in starting field position. They had a double-digit starting field position advantage in the win over Kansas, the same with the win over NC State. That played a critical role in both those games. But unfortunately, against Iowa State, they had a deficit of 14 yards. Iowa State's average starting field position, its own 35-yard line. West Virginia, its own 21. That 14-yard differential is way too much for a West Virginia team with roster limitations to overcome, as evidenced by the fact that the Mountaineers this year are 3-0 when they win the starting field position advantage and 0-3 when they don't.
Defensively, the negatives first is we gave up too many 10-yard-plus plays. We have to do a better job getting off the field on third and fourth down. We did not do a good enough job of that. I thought the positives were the pick six.
Purdy has the snap. Blitz comes. Dump pass. Ball is bobbled. It's nearly intercepted. It is. And on the run, Tyke Smith in the end zone. Touchdown. It got deflected into the air on the pass intended for Nwangu on a screen. It got popped into the air. And the true freshman, Tyke Smith, picked it up on the second hop and ran it into the end zone. Dante Stills applied the pressure on Purdy, forcing the quick release, and Tyke Smith took the deflected pass, 18 yards. It is a pick six, and with 4:29 to go in our opening quarter, West Virginia scores first. What a play for the true freshman, Tyke Smith.
I thought for really three quarters or more, we had Brock Purdy off his game.
Snap back to Purdy. Play actions. Wants to throw all kinds of time. Now runs out of the pocket. Still looking downfield. They're going to get him. He goes down. He's sacked on the play by Quandarius Qualls. Initial pressure by the freshman Jordan Jefferson. And they'll drop Purdy for a four-yard loss. He waited and he waited and he waited. And finally, the Mountaineers were able to corral him.
I thought we did some nice things in our rushing defense. They averaged 3.3 yards per carry. And we gave ourselves a chance to win defensively, again, going into the fourth quarter.
The West Virginia defense ran out of gas in the fourth quarter, but there was a lot of good stuff along the way in those first three quarters. Shortly after Austin Kendall's injury in the first quarter, the defense, almost as if it could sense the offense would now suddenly need a little extra help, almost immediately responded with that pick six that brought the Mountaineer sidelines to life. And overall, West Virginia held Iowa State to 372 yards. That's the Cyclones' lowest yardage output this year. And Vic Koenig's defense limited Brock Purdy to a very pedestrian passer rating of 131.8. For some perspective, which of course you always need when people start tossing out arbitrary passer rating numbers, that proved to be the second lowest passer rating posted by Brock Purdy in his 14 career starts with Iowa State. And remember, that all came against a West Virginia defensive lineup that was peppered with youth, including the true freshman quintet of Nick Troy Fortune, Tyke Smith, Tay Mayo, Kerry Martin, and Jordan Jefferson, who combined for 18 tackles, three pass breakups, one tackle for loss, and of course, one pick, which resulted in the touchdown. If you're looking for any kind of silver lining from last Saturday, consider the volume of young talent that West Virginia had in that lineup, and you might find it.
Offensively, not a whole lot of positives. We were better on third down, but turnovers hurt us. You know, our running game, it's been a struggle all year, and it was no different on Saturday. And then the biggest thing that hurt us are the negative plays. We had 12 negative plays out of 56 snaps. I mean, three sacks and nine TFL, so that's not good enough.
A number that high in the negative play category really doesn't sit well with Neil Brown. He's a guy that throughout his career has avoided the pitfalls and the problems that come with long yardage situations by staying ahead of schedule. And he's done that by avoiding negative yardage plays. Right now, West Virginia has allowed more tackles for loss than any team in the Big 12. And trust me when I say, when Neil Brown gets this thing where he wants it, you won't see that type of backward movement from this Mountaineer offense. When things are in place as per his plan offensively, just look to Troy. Troy did a great job of avoiding negative yardage plays. They consistently ranked toward the top of the Sun Belt Conference in both TFL avoidance and sack avoidance. In fact, during one of Neil Brown's years at Troy, Matt Moore's offensive line allowed the fewest sacks in the entire country. But that kind of efficiency, of course, doesn't happen overnight. We've said before, and we'll say it again, this is all a work in progress. If I'm looking for a positive from the West Virginia offense last week, it has to be what played out in the first half when Jack Allison came off the bench stone cold in relief of Austin Kendall. For the better part of a quarter and a half, the West Virginia offense effectively moved the football, 5 of 7 on third down conversions, while Jack Allison connected on 10 of 12 pass attempts for over 100 yards, orchestrating a 14-play drive right before the half to tie the game going in at the intermission.
Allison drops, fires on a crossing route, ball caught T.J. Simmons, face mask, puts it in the end zone, touchdown. Stiff arm the tackler, Bickham, put him right down on the ground, right into his face mask. He put that right hand and dropped him in the turf, and T.J. Simmons scores the touchdown.
But one of the problems in losing your starting quarterback is that when he goes down, a big chunk of your game plan goes down with him. With your backup in the game, you're forced to shrink your offense and regress to your more basic vanilla concepts. The defense knows this, which is why Iowa State went in, they made adjustments at halftime, and they came out with a solid defensive plan to take advantage of this in the third and fourth quarters. And that plan, coupled with West Virginia's inability to execute on the offensive side, led to a lack of production by a Mountaineer offense that in that second half couldn't seem to get the parking brake off. And so that puts West Virginia at 3-3 as the Mountaineers prepare for this weekend's trip to Gaylord Family Oklahoma Memorial Stadium in Norman, where the Sooners are 116-10 since the start of the 1999 season, winning those games by an average score of 43-17. Just another game, right? We'll take a look at Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma Sooners when we return in just a handful of seconds.
Mountaineer Nation, set your podcatcher and never miss an episode of The Signal Caller.
Owen Schmidt, like a runaway beer truck down the sidelines. Big Owen Schmidt, touchdown, West Virginia.
Yeah, the option, of course, is go for the end zone, go for everything. And that's what he's going to go, down the end zone. And it is touchdown.
Can you believe that? What an effort.
Caught down there by Darrell Miller, who makes another great catch for West Virginia. And West Virginia has gone ahead of Oklahoma, a stunned Sooner team here.
They run the draw, play it back with room. 35, 30, 30, 20. And that is going to be back to score, and it's going to be all over for Oklahoma. West Virginia's pulled a stunning upset of the opening weekend of college football. No question, they have knocked over one of the Giants, the Oklahoma Sooners of Barry Switzer. Here's the big news, the final, West Virginia 41, Oklahoma 27.
And there's just a couple old sound bites to remind you that the Crimson and Cream haven't always seemed so musket-proof to the guys in old golden blue. Long before the night of Leave No Doubt, the night of the runaway beer truck in the desert in Arizona, West Virginia's Fiesta Bowl win over number 3 Oklahoma in 2008, there was, of course, West Virginia's 1982 season opening trip to Norman to take on Barry Switzer's number 9 ranked Sooners, and we all know how that played out. Don Nealon's Mountaineers, behind a 300-yard passing performance by Jeff Hostetler, stunned the Sooners 41-27. And I remember back in 2013, which marked West Virginia's first trip to Norman as a member of the Big 12 Conference, a game that also signified the Mountaineers' first return trip to Norman since the big win back in 1982. Jeff Hostetler and Coach Don Nealon were on the team charter as special guests of the university for that return trip to the Palace on the Prairie. And here's something I won't soon forget. Guess who somehow, someway ended up sitting between the two on the team flight to Oklahoma? Yours truly. Coach Nealon was in the window seat to my left, and Haas was in the aisle seat to my right. I remember as I looked to each side, feeling as though we were somehow almost flying through a portal back through time, 3 decades, to 1982, to relive and to honor one of the coolest moments in the history of Mountaineer football.
If I had a time machine, I think I'd go back to when a Mars-sized protoplanet sideswiped Earth in the early solar system, sideswiping our crust, casting billions of tons of rock into orbit around the Earth, which then coalesced to form our moon.
I'd go back to Norman, Oklahoma in September of 1982. Neil deGrasse Tyson can have his cosmic collision. I'd rather be on hand to watch Don Nealon's upstart Mountaineers take down one of the biggest brands in sports in a game that helped put West Virginia football on the national map.
West Virginia, coached by Don Nealon, who left his alma mater, Bowling Green, and in 2 short years has turned around a program that was dormant, trying to challenge one of the mighty teams of college football year in, year out. The University of Oklahoma Sooners, who are coached by the great Barry Switzer, America's winningest coach, 90 victories in his first 9 years.
One of the many cool things about college football is that our memories attached to it are very personal. Different games mean different things to different people. And that win over Oklahoma in 1982, in particular for me, will always be kind of dear to my heart because it was 7 days later that I attended my first West Virginia football game, September 18th, 1982. Mountaineer Field was, of course, structured much differently back then, but our Pop Warner football team had acquired a pass or passes to sit behind the end zone down on field level to watch the game. And so it was. My dad loaded a bunch of us into his old Chevy Blazer, as did a couple other parents. We headed to Morgantown. And from behind the end zone, we watched as Rich Hollins made a diving catch of a Hostetler pass, sliding in the end zone right in front of us to give West Virginia a fourth quarter lead. I remember feeling as though it was so close, some beads of sweat almost came off of him and bounced onto us. A few minutes later, the West Virginia defense stopped a Maryland two-point conversion attempt to hold on for a 19-18 win over Boomer Esiason's Terrapins. That first experience at Mountaineer Field made a lasting impression on me, and more than a quarter century later, when I did my very first hit as the sideline reporter for the old MSN broadcast... I made it a point to do it with a mic in my hand from that exact same spot on the field behind the south end zone where I'd watched Rich Hollins' game-winning catch through the eyes of a mesmerized 12-year-old. And speaking of mesmerized, that's what all six opposing defenses have been by Jalen Hurts and the Oklahoma Sooners' historically dynamic offense. Of course, the words historically dynamic have become the status quo in Norman, Oklahoma in recent years.
They're the number one offense in the country. They've been right there at the top, two Heisman Trophy winners in a row. Some of the numbers look like stuff that our players play on Madden.
Touchdown.
They got 9.6 yards per play, 335 passing, 286 rushing. Just, you know, it is good. I would say probably the best offense in the country. That obviously with those numbers, that goes without saying. He's put together a great offense staff. Bill Beanbo, who was here as an offensive line coach, he does as good a job as anybody in the country. Kale Gundy's been there for a lot of years and coached a lot of big-time players at Oklahoma. Dennis Simmons, he's had a number of big-time wideouts. And that leads me to you start off with C.D. Lamb.
Wide open, C.D. in space. C.D. Lamb still running. It's a corner. C.D. for the TD. We told you he was electric with the ball in his hands, and he doesn't disappoint.
If there's somebody better playing the receiver position better in the country right now, I haven't seen him.
Few play callers in college football can set the table as effectively and utilize toys like C.D. Lamb and Charleston Rambo and Trey Sermon as efficiently as Lincoln Riley. Part of that, of course, has been Riley's evolution as an offensive architect and as a play caller. In 5 years as the offensive coordinator at East Carolina, the post that he held before arriving in Norman in 2015, his Pirate offense has averaged just 4 yards per carry and 133 rush yards per game. In other words, barely enough to even keep defenses honest as he attacked them with his wide-open air raid passing concepts. But when he arrived in Norman as Bob Stoops' offensive coordinator and found the Sooners' backfield populated with talented runners like Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon, he recognized that he had to put players like that to use. He reimagined some things offensively, marrying a newfound ground game with his core air raid passing concepts. The result has been a nearly unstoppable offense ever since. That first year in 2015, the Sooners averaged 222 rush yards per game, and they've climbed beyond that pretty consistently each year, up to the point where they're averaging 286 halfway through this season. And from a yards per carry standpoint, that's where it gets even more impressive. You talk about a consistent and steady ascent. In year one, 2015, the Sooners averaged 5 yards per carry. The next year, it went up to 5.4. The year after that, 5.6. Then 6.6. And now they're averaging 7.7 yards per carry. In other words, each year, they're getting better at what they do. And when you combine that kind of potency in your ground game with Lincoln Riley's ability to recognize the weaknesses of various defensive coverages and then design his pass packages to attack those weaknesses, it's no surprise that they've been breaking records by the bucket load even as they plug new personnel into the system in critical roles. Riley's system at large has its roots in the air raid offense, and it's built around a handful of foundational concepts. And what he does, he window dresses those concepts, giving the defense 1,000 different looks while allowing the offense to focus on mastering the nuances of those concepts without really having to reinvent the wheel. This puts them in position to flourish at a record-setting pace offensively, despite their turnover in personnel. Case in point, in 2017 with Baker Mayfield at the helm, The Sooners led the nation with an average of 8.3 yards per play offensively.
You know, Baker, I could help you with that.
Oh, no, it's fine. Thanks, though. A man should cut his own lawn.
Last year with Kyler Murray, they upped the ante, averaging an all-time FBS single-season record 8.6 yards per play. And so far this year, with Jalen Hurts behind center, they're continuing to raise the bar with an absurd average of 9.6 yards per play. That's the number you heard Neil Brown allude to earlier, a yard better than last year's FBS record. Want more proof? Last year's Oklahoma offensive line won the Joe Moore Award as the top offensive line in college football. Then, they lost four of their five starters off that unit to the NFL draft. Skeptics, of course, suggested, and perhaps reasonably so, that the Sooners might finally take a step backward because these hits might be too much to overcome. Well, the numbers so far this season certainly don't suggest that the unit up front anchoring this Oklahoma offense is rough around the edges in any way, shape, or form. The Sooners lead the nation in both yards per pass attempt and yards per rush. They've allowed only four sacks all year, and they've suffered just six turnovers. Oklahoma has punted only 12 times, the fewest in FBS football, and the Sooners have scored a touchdown in 23 of 24 quarters in 2019. They've hardly punted because they've rarely even faced third downs. In fact, they've faced only 57 third downs all year. That's also the fewest number in the FBS. The Sooners rank number one nationally in scrimmage plays of 10-plus yards, 20-plus yards, 30-plus yards, and 40-plus yards. They rank number one nationally at a clip of 622 total yards per game offensively, the all-time record for yards per game at all levels of college football, 640.1 yards a game. That was by the 1984 Mississippi Valley Delta Devils, the offense that torched virtually everything in its path with a receiver you might have heard of.
Quick pass, slant in, Jerry Rice, another touchdown! Jerry Rice continues to set records in the Super Bowl.
Now, if you look at just Division I or FBS level offenses, the all-time yards per game record is 624.9 yards per game, and that was established by the 1989 Houston Cougars, the team that was coached by Jack Pardee and produced the 1989 Heisman Trophy winner, Andre Ware. So looking at these numbers should give you some sort of context to really drive home just how impressive this Oklahoma offense has been and to appreciate its place in history. And the centerpiece in this 2019 edition of the Sooners offense has been quarterback Jalen Hurts, who now remarkably has a 32-2 career record as a starting quarterback. If you watched him against Texas in that huge environment in the Cotton Bowl last week, you once again were treated to the type of magic that Jalen Hurts is capable of.
Hurts in trouble. Hurts. Did he break contain? Hurts still. Buying time. Deliver. Caught.
This ball was behind his back, and he somehow hangs on. Watch the hand strength. It's behind his back. He's trying to switch hands, and he does with Osai hanging all over him. And then he finds the completion down the field. That is remarkable.
He's the nation's number two rated passer, and he's 14th in the country in rushing yards per game. And his skill set isn't lost on West Virginia defensive coordinator Vic Koenig.
You did see some of that stuff on Twitter, didn't you, where he's spinning the ball back behind his back and doing stuff. I think the best thing he does, he's a smart football player. I mean, he throws the ball well, he runs the ball, he runs it as good as any running back. Has been like that since he was at Alabama, probably was like that in high school. They've got a very complicated offense, lots and lots and lots and lots of different formations and motions and shifts, and I'm not saying more than the group last week, but comparable. And he's able to, you know, manipulate that offense. I can't sit there and tell you that I've seen anything that I think we can take advantage of.
And so West Virginia's young defense will step into what is a boiling witch's cauldron for any defense. Norman, Oklahoma, to face this uber-dynamic Oklahoma Sooners offense. You could make the case that at no point in history have defenses faced a tougher challenge than going into Gaylord Family Stadium and facing this Oklahoma attack. during this unprecedented run under Lincoln Riley. But here's the good news. After tangling with this offense in that environment for all these young freshmen and sophomores, what can possibly hold peril beyond that? I mean, think about it. As a defensive player moving forward in the coming years or even in the coming weeks, what could possibly make you flinch after facing this Oklahoma offense in a building where they're averaging 58 points a game this year? The funny thing about youth can sometimes be, though, in environments as daunting as this one, sometimes young football players are too young to recognize they should be intimidated by it.
Defensively, much improved. I think that's where the story is for them this season. Credit to Coach Grinch and that defensive staff. They're playing hard. They run extremely well. They're multiple in their looks. I think there's a couple guys that really stick out when you turn it on. Their nose guard, Gallimore. He has been a real difficult block for everybody they've played against. He's defeating double teams. I mean, he's penetrating in rushing defense and getting after the passer. Their Mike linebacker, Murray, runs extremely well. He's making plays sideline to sideline. I think their corners are playing really aggressive. I think they've made big strides since last year.
West Virginia co-offensive coordinator Matt Moore agrees. He sees the improvement in Oklahoma from last year to this year and believes the Sooners defense presents plenty of challenges.
They just play really hard, you know, and they move a lot. They do a lot of picks, a lot of twists up front, and they got really good ball get off. They do a good job using their personnel, using their linebackers to come off the edge as speed rushers. And it's just, they create chaos. You know, that's what they do, is they create chaos because everybody tries to game plan them to block, you know, try to get two hats on some of their D linemen. And when you do that, you create some confusion up front.
Third down to 12 of the 30. Empty backfield for Ellinger. Under pressure, Ellinger sacked. All right, how about this? Alex Grinch defense, Neville Gallimore getting to the quarterback.
There was one question about this team coming into this season, and really for the last couple of seasons, it has been, can this defense improve to a level where this offense can go and compete for a national championship?
A year ago, it's no secret that the Oklahoma defense was an unmitigated dumpster fire. It's also no secret that the Oklahoma offense, more often than not, bailed them out. Sometimes we saw this reach ridiculous extremes. According to @ESPN Stats Info, Oklahoma became the only team since the Associated Press poll debuted in 1936 to win four consecutive contests in which they surrendered 40-plus points. In fact, no other team had ever even done it three times in a row. But things have changed, and changed quickly in Norman. Throw in the game tape, and you see a team playing harder, playing faster, being more physical. And you look at the numbers, it supports what you're seeing on video. A year ago, Oklahoma was dead last in the Big 12 in total defense, allowing 454 yards a game. This year, they've shaved more than 100 yards off that total and climbed into fourth place in total defense in the league. A year ago in scoring defense, again, last in the Big 12, allowing 33 points per game. This year, they've shaved nearly two touchdowns off that total, now allowing only 20 points per game and climbing up to number three in the Big 12 in scoring defense. Pass defense, a year ago, they were dead last in the nation, 130th, allowing 294 yards a game. So far in 2019, they've climbed to number 37 in the country against the pass, allowing just 200 yards per game. And finally, third down defense. A year ago, the Sooners couldn't buy a stop on third down, finishing dead last in the Big 12, allowing opposing offenses to successfully move the sticks 46% of the time. This year, opponents have only converted 28% of their third down tries, good enough for Oklahoma to hold down the number two spot in third down defense in the Big 12. So how have the Sooners been able to so abruptly shift their culture on the defensive side of the football? It all started with one very critical hire this past offseason.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. OU is bringing the Grinch to Norman. The Sooners officially hiring Ohio State's Alex Grinch tonight as their next defensive coordinator. Grinch was the co-defensive coordinator this season for the Buckeyes. Before that, he was the DC at Washington State for 3 seasons. There, he helped the Cougars improve their national ranking in total defense from 99th all the way up to 16th.
So what's the secret? How has Alex Grinch stepped onto campus and, in effect, over the course of one off season, mended a culture on the defensive side of the football for the Sooners that in many ways has been in a state of disrepair since defensive coordinator Brent Venables left for Clemson in 2012. In a word, effort.
It's an effort-based defense. You know, effort's the greatest equalizer in sport, which means it also can go both ways. And so if you allow that individual across from you to play with more effort than you, you can have the fanciest scheme in the world. It's not going to do you a whole lot of good.
The players have bought in. This approach has put Alex Grinch in position to get the most out of Oklahoma's defensive talent. And they do have talent. They always have. In recent years, they simply haven't been playing up to their potential. Oklahoma has consistently recruited well in the last several decades, and that includes on the defensive side of the football, even though it didn't translate to results on the field. Well, now it's starting to. You're starting to see some production out of guys like cornerback Brendan Radley Hiles. He was the number 5 rated cornerback in the country coming out of Bradenton, Florida a couple years ago. He signed with the Sooners over offers from Clemson and Florida State. How do you go from being a defensive hot mess a year ago to tying a school record with 9 sacks against Texas last week? You do it by maximizing the potential of a talented defensive line, a defensive line that includes guys like Neville Gallimore, a former 4-star recruit out of Ontario who picked OU over other blue bloods like Ohio State and Florida State and Auburn. He was a prized recruit, and under Alex Grinch, he's starting to play like the elite nose tackle that a lot of folks always thought he could be. Marquise Overton, another guy that had one of those sacks against the Longhorns, and another guy on that defensive line who was a highly sought-after recruit, a 4-star kid who picked Oklahoma over half the Big 12 and programs from the SEC and the Big 10. These are the types of guys who are starting to come closer to reaching their potential under Alex Grinch. They're hustling, they're swarming to the football, and they're tackling with an attitude. All things that you haven't seen out of Oklahoma defenders in recent years. Fox analyst Joe Klatt, one of the best in the business, has noticed the transformation taking place on the defensive side of the football in Oklahoma, and he's impressed.
What's the biggest question about the University of Oklahoma and their football team? The defense. Are they playoff caliber? Are they a caliber defense that can go and win a playoff game? And I think they're starting to prove to most people around the country, certainly me today, that they are a defense that can go and play really well, in particular in big moments, potentially down the road in a playoff-type scenario. Today, they held Texas to only 100 yards rushing and 2.8 yards per carry. They did a marvelous job creating pressure on Sam Ellinger. They had 9 sacks on the day. They had 15 total tackles for loss. They were aggressive. They were terrific up front defensively. I thought Neville Gallimore played his best game. Kenneth Murray was flying around. And the story of the day from Red River, Oklahoma has a defense.
That was the story of the day from Red River and the story of the week from Morgantown, who will step onto the field as West Virginia's starting quarterback at Oklahoma. Austin Kendall's injury early in the Iowa State game put that up in the air, but Neil Brown addressed it earlier this week, albeit a little cryptically, saying that either way, West Virginia will have a plan at quarterback, while mentioning Kendall, Jack Allison, and Trey Lowe.
We put Jack in the game. We felt like Jack gave us the best chance a week ago. So we've got a plan moving forward with quarterback position. Not something I'm going to sit up here and talk about. If Austin can't go on Saturday, we've got a plan, and we'll move forward with that plan. Trey's getting better. But we thought Jack gave us the best opportunity on Saturday.
It's not often we get to see Neil Brown go full wilderness of mirrors mode, but first of all, when something does turn on a soft tissue injury like the one suffered by Austin Kendall, it's anybody's guess as to what kind of timeline you might be looking at. So there's not a lot of information that Coach Brown could have offered. But second of all, what does a coaching staff really stand to gain by throwing out onto the table for all the world to see your short-term and maybe your long-term strategy at the quarterback position? Let it unfold see where it goes. All right, folks, it's time to get in victory formation and take a knee to run the clock out here on episode 15 of the Signal Caller podcast. The Mountaineers, 33.5-point underdogs, brace for one of their stiffest challenges in recent memory. As West Virginia prepares for its trip to the Sooner State, don't expect Oklahoma to be suffering from any kind of Red River hangover. The Sooners have won 19 of their last 20 games the week after playing Texas. But this isn't the first time that Neil Brown will arrive in Norman, Oklahoma, playing the role of heavy underdog. I point this out not as any kind of hot take or bold prediction. It's merely an observation. But back in 2011, Neil Brown was on Tommy Tuberville's staff at Texas Tech. The Red Raiders headed to Norman as 4-touchdown underdogs, and after an extensive lightning and storm delay, they finally got to play the football game, and in no small part due to a crafty offensive plan put together by Neil Brown, Texas Tech, a different team at a different time, but facing a somewhat similar circumstance, did the impossible.
Upset time in Norman. The 39-game home winning streak, longest in the country, goes by the boards, and a happy group of Red Raiders.
And so the biggest upset that Neil Brown has been part of in his coaching career wasn't last year when his Trojans knocked off Nebraska in Lincoln. They were 10.5-point underdogs. It wasn't even in 2017 when Troy marched into Baton Rouge and stunned LSU. They were 20.5-point underdogs. The biggest shocker that Neil Brown has helped orchestrate in his career was 8 years ago on Tuesday as the offensive coordinator with 28-point underdog Texas Tech in the Palace on the Prairie. So after back-to-back games in which West Virginia, as a double-digit underdog each time, drugged first Texas, then Iowa State, into the fourth quarter of a one-possession game, do the Mountaineers have any more surprising jet fuel in the tank for Lincoln Riley's number 5-ranked Oklahoma Sooners? Well, there's one guy I can promise you believes they do, and that's our old friend Champ Sedmok, a Mountaineer fan of the highest order. He'll be cheering as hard as he possibly can from Cortland Acres in Thomas, West Virginia, maybe even hard enough that we'll hear him on the sidelines in Norman. These are the kinds of challenges that the Big 12 is all about. Kickoff Saturday at high noon Eastern time. Until then, I'll see you at the 50.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
The fun doesn't have to stop here.
Be sure to hit subscribe on your podcatcher now and never miss an episode.
If you have any questions, suggestions, or feedback,
head over right now to Twitter at the Signal Caller and get involved.
Join us again next time.
Until then,
we'll see you at the 50.